Cut it. Can we get rid of that? Cut it. Not a fan. Is that like fucking Diet Nickelback or something? Seriously, have we got something even more generic you can find to put people fucking sleep? Jesus. Look, let's cut the shit. 30-minute interviews released weekly. We're going to talk to some everyday Australian guys, ordinary blokes who have been through something extraordinary. It's going to be raw. It's going to be emotional. But hopefully you can go away with some tips and tricks, maybe some good habits that'll get you through your own rough patch of life. We're trying to break a stigma here. Blokes don't talk, so we're starting a conversation. Yeah, mate, no worries. Let's fucking go again. Outro music. Show us your picture, Chad. Hello, Corey. How are you?
I'm good, mate. Yourself?
I'm well, thank you, sir. I feel a bit disingenuous asking that after we've just talked shit for 45 minutes to an hour, but...
It didn't feel right, did it?
We'll pretend right. That was an authentic hello.
if people knew us, they'd know we've been talking for the last hour. It's just going to happen.
For the last 2 years, but yeah. Exactly. So, Corey Oliver, who used to be my personal trainer / life coach / dear friend, is my lovely interview guest today. So let's set up your story a little bit, man. Where were you born? When? Where did you grow up?
Sweet. So 31st of August 1994, so that makes me the ripe old age of 25. Born in Campbelltown, New South Wales, which is a suburb of Sydney for people that don't know. Didn't really grow up in one particular spot. Dad was in the army, so we bounced around a little bit. But I suppose Sale, Victoria was a major part of my life. I think lived over half my life there. So I'd say that's where I did most of my growing up.
Yeah, very cool, man. So from what age were you kind of settled in Sale?
From about 10, I think I was. So about 13, 14 years.
Yeah, nice. And family structure, just you, dad and mum?
And brother, younger brother.
And younger brother. How old's your brother?
2 years younger than me, so he'd be 23.
23. Very cool, very cool. So tell us about education of Mr. Corey.
So finished high school, went to university. Wasn't for me.
Where was uni, man?
Hey?
Where was uni?
Vic University in Footscray, Melbourne.
Yep.
So Melbourne.
What were you studying there?
Exercise science.
Yes, yeah, sorry. I knew that, obviously, but for everyone else. So what was the step thereafter for you?
A lot of went into more mentorships. So found that aligning myself with people that had already done it well in the industry, so obviously the fitness industry, lining myself up with them and learning what they did and just gained some knowledge of those guys, some real-world practicality knowledge and some deeper thinking knowledge as well. So really learned from a few different mentorships, you know, critical thinking, looking at things different way, actually being able to piece things together, as well as higher knowledge in terms of the science-based stuff around the body.
Yeah, awesome, man. It's crazy, evolution of education across the last 20 years. When I was growing up and I was finished year 12 in 2000, it was... not sure if it was a Victorian thing or a Australia-wide thing, but pretty much if you had some academic ability, you went to uni, otherwise you were kind of failing and you certainly, you know, didn't drop out and stuff like I did as soon as I realised it wasn't for me. And then I went to WA and with the mining boom and everything, suddenly there was actually government ads on TV encouraging people not to continue their education and to jump into apprenticeships and whatnot for... earning capacity sooner and the likes and I think that was kind of probably the start of the breaking of that stigma, maybe. Like education at the moment, I feel like it's going through a huge upheaval where people realize those traditional models don't necessarily get you the full journey to your goal, as you obviously found.
100%, 100%, and it's also understanding it's like you can learn that shit without going to uni. Like, there's nothing special. They're not reinventing the wheel by going to uni. It's almost like it's put in place that you have a habit of going to a place to learn for X amount of time a day. So you have to learn it especially because you're paying all this money for it. You can learn all the stuff yourself.
It's funny, we were talking about that slightly different, I guess, causal effect for the conversation, but talking about that before, that there's so much information out there that you can find, but there's this, as you'd find in your profession as a coach and PT, there's a lot of people that love to pay money to feel like they've achieved something rather than take it upon themselves to learn and grow them off their own back.
100%. 100%.
So professionally, I'm probably jumping around a little bit here. So you're now on the Gold Coast. You, mum and dad have moved up there?
100%, yep.
Yep, so take us through the progression since those mentorships in terms of where your career's developed in the exercise and sports physiology sort of field.
Yeah, so it's essentially two fields I'm going to be working in. So one, I'm going to take it into the online space. I like presenting on things health and that sort of stuff, so starting to develop that out, so online coaching and doing some workshops as well, as well as we're looking at, you know, eventually having our own studio and being able to work out of there as well, so running the gym how we perceive it should be ran in terms of health and performance.
Yes. Yep. So it's pretty obviously, we were speaking before about the challenges, or as you very positively frame it, the opportunities of the current lockdowns with coronavirus and whatnot, and chance to not so much be reborn, but go into the next stage of growth for you and your business after all this. Take us through that, man.
Yeah, so essentially it's been a massive opportunity. It's allowed us to identify holes in our business where we've known that we weren't doing things to the best of our ability in certain aspects of business, but you sort of, I suppose that's what income does. It can cover those holes. So now, and I think my mentor, Kyle Trainer, he said it perfectly. It's right now, every single business in the world that has been affected by the coronavirus is laid bare. Like, you can see every aspect of people's business and where it went wrong. And for us, it's done that. But I look at that as awesome. Sweet. I'm going to have a better business coming out of this than I did going into this. And for me, that's fucking exciting.
Yeah, that's a fantastic framing, man. I saw I think it was Jordan Peterson put on his Insta or Facebook yesterday, a quote that I'll definitely get wrong, but was along the vibe of when your world goes to shit, everything that you've ignored comes to the floor, basically. I probably haven't actually done too bad an effort of reciting that.
That sounds spot on.
Didn't have the cursor trees in it, that's for sure. But I think that frames the intent. I guess, you know, that's a great reason not to ignore the elephants in your respective rooms. But it's also something you've managed to put a positive spin on there in terms of the downtime has allowed you to focus on where you could be better, maybe.
100%. Yeah, and that's where growth occurs. Like, growth is never comfortable. I think that's one thing a lot of people don't understand. It's like, look, I'm a coach and a PT, right? Like, how many times do you train and you don't feel a thing? Never. Like, you always feel something, and it's never comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's one of the most cliched, but also enduringly true, you know, motivational style post you'll see around, just where it's got the circle that's one's comfort zone and, you know, an arrow or a cross or whatever it may be, indicating growth outside the circle of your day-to-day comfortable life. And it's very true. I've been reading a lot of literature recently on growth potential and whatnot and fulfillment and sort of the zone in which it's actually from an employee standpoint, but the zone in which you should keep people to keep them within reach of achievement without overloading them, basically. And it's, you know, you need to be constantly on that fringe of something that you may not be able to achieve to be proud of what you're up to, basically.
100%.
Yeah. So aside from work up there, ma'am, you've got a lovely lady in your life now.
I do.
So that's only fairly fresh. So I won't ask you about kids or anything else as yet.
It's only fresh, mate. Calm down on that.
So hobbies-wise, obviously you're very driven. You're one of the more driven people I know. But what does downtime represent for you? Do you have anything you're indulging in up there that's entirely separate to your professional pursuits?
Obviously footy player. I do love me footy. I'm missing it at the moment. Did go for a kick the other day, which was really enjoyable. I suppose footy's been a lot of my basis for a lot of things. So it sort of brought me back to something I love doing, and it was quite enjoyable. Obviously, can't just go to training or play games at the moment. So having a kick around outside was quite enjoyable. So footy, I'm a little bit of a gamer. I do like, that's how I use to just escape. Because I'm one of those people, like if I'm not working, I'll be thinking about the industry, like I'll be thinking about the body or learning or something like that, because I enjoy it. I love it.
What's your platform of choice, man?
PS4, man. I'm PlayStation, man.
Yep.
Got to. So, yeah, that's what I like to do with my time, reading, that sort of stuff. But a lot of that stuff's around me industry. So downtime for me is very much I'm either watching movies or playing a bit of PlayStation.
Yep.
TV shows, that sort of stuff.
So where were you? We've obviously discussed it, but add some geographical reference for listeners. Where were you looking at playing this year before the world went to shit?
Broadbeach. So Broadbeach, catching the Queensland AFL League.
Understand. Man, we've kind of smashed through that first setup of all things at Akori. So might take a quick break and we'll get into some of the deeper stuff you've had to go through and whatnot, if that's cool with you.
100%, man. Looking forward to it.
All right, bro. And now, a word from our sponsor. Nah, just fucking with you guys. We're never going to monetize this. This is your resource. And blokes, this round's on me. As we move into the next section of this conversation, we're going to be asking some pretty real questions. We're going to take things a level deeper. It'll be raw, but hopefully we'll come up with some tips and techniques that might help some fellas out there get through a bit. If what we discussed today raises some emotions for you, either from something you've got through in the past or something you're currently dealing with, discuss it with someone in your life you trust. If someone isn't immediately available, or if you're quite anxious about the feelings that you uncover, call Lifeline Australia. They're available 24/7, they care, and they're very professional. 13 11 14. Alternately, have the chat with your GP. Discuss going on a mental health plan if you're having a rough time. There's no shame in it. Get a little bit of counselling, get yourself travelling in the right direction. If the voice in our head gets a little bit negative, it doesn't magically get better. We need to introduce a professional. Someone who has a bit of rationality, someone who has a bit of positivity, somebody who can help us not just survive, but thrive. We need you, fellas, and we want to see the best of you. All right, we're back with Corey. Man, I just realised some questions I want to ask you at the end of this as well, so I hope they'll remember those. But we'll crack in with the template that we've been going through with fellas, and it absolutely deep ends you. What is the hardest thing that you've ever had to go through in your life, bro?
I don't think I could put it down to one particular event. I think it's a cumulative effect of a lot of different things that, you know, sort of align in the same region. So I'll start from the start and get to the end, to where I am now. So essentially, probably the thing that was hardest for me was I was bullied when I was sort of in school, made fun of a lot growing up. But also growing up, what coincided was I was obviously a footy player. So since a young age, I've always wanted to go as far as I can. I suppose that's part of my demeanour and my personality is going as far as I can with something. So when I was sort of, I think the first instance that I can remember, I remember when I was in school and I remember this come up. And it wasn't really bullying or anything, but it's like that external recognition of something. So I was quite young, I was 5 or 6. And I remember we were drawing self-portraits and for some reason I coloured mine in blue instead of colouring in like a a creamy color that represents the skin. And I remember the teacher sort of called it out and in front of the class, and it was quite embarrassing. It was sort of that, it was like, oh, I've done something wrong for, you know, just doing something different. So sort of it all stemmed from there, and obviously being bullied throughout school. And then in terms of footy, and this also shaped me as well, I remember not making the rep side when I was like 11. And it's got nothing to do with like, oh, you know, I was good enough, why didn't I make it sort of thing. It was the fact that I was never told why I didn't make it, if that makes sense. So I sort of had no explanation for, and for a kid, like, that's a big thing. Like, if you don't know what you've done wrong, like, how can you fix it? So for me, that stemmed through it. So, yeah, I reckon those couple of incidents, especially like the bullying and that, were probably the hardest things I've been through.
Yeah, full on, man. So what helped you, I guess, what positive coping mechanisms did you come up with across your journey? And obviously it's not an isolated event, but what sort of, yeah, coping mechanisms did you turn to that sort of helped you deal with that?
So I suppose that whole, that's probably, as I said, I was 5 or 6, so that streamed over till I was about early 20s, so a few years ago, to the point where I made VFL and that. And I suppose a couple of years after I made VFL and I'd left uni, I actually did my first mentorship with FMA. And the lead guy in that, Mark Buckley, he actually helped me get through it and actually understand what I needed to do to move forward. And it was as simple as becoming aware of what had actually occurred and why I think the way I think. So for me, my thought process was like, if I don't get recognized for what I do, I'm not doing it well enough and I'm not doing it correctly. And for me, being someone who believes they are a high achiever, if I'm not doing things well, I'll push myself until I'm doing it well. And if I don't get recognition, how can I ever tell if I'm doing things well? So for me, it was becoming conscious and aware of that, and then understanding that the only person I need to please in life is myself, and that I can't control other people's emotions and reactions to me. I can only control my behaviors. And it's not me as a person that is causing them distress. It's the reaction and the perception of my behaviors, but it's not me as a person. And once I understood that, it changed the game. Now I didn't believe I was a problem. It wasn't me as a person. It was the behaviors and stuff like that. And you can change behaviors, but you as a person, it's a bit hard. You can't really change yourself.
Yeah, man, that's absolutely brilliant. So I guess, you know, knowing you, you're not a particularly vice-ridden individual. No, your mum used to like a smoke, but that obviously hasn't carried on to you. Shout out, Susan. So hi for me.
She will love that you said that. I'm going to cop a slap.
Well, I'm in Victoria, so I'm immune. You're fine. She'll remember, though. She'll remember. So flip side of the coin, man. I know you're not exactly vice-ridden, but what habits didn't help whilst you were growing up with that? I presume from what you've identified there that maybe seeking that attention/recognition was a bit of a negative loop cycle.
Yeah, well, see, I reckon I disagree with you that I was a vice person, but not in terms of what the norm is. So I didn't turn to drugs, I didn't turn to alcohol or anything in that nature. My vice was exercise, and like if I was having a shitty day, I would run myself into the ground. Like I would go. We had obviously, you know, the lakes in Sale. Like if I was having a shitty day and I didn't feel good, I'd go for a run and just run that as quick as I could. Like I'd go lift some weights and just throw weights around and just lift as heavy as I could. So I would literally run myself into the ground. Like I remember when I was at VFL level and I was doing friggin', I talk about this all the time because this is my story. Like I was going to uni 4 days a week. I was training 3 to 4 days a week. And then I was doing 4 to 5 gym workouts. And then in season, I was playing a game. And I was doing that week in, week out because it made me feel better. And if I wasn't doing something, I felt like I was not moving forward. I was falling behind. So yeah, like for me, it was exercise. Like that was how I escaped.
Two-part question, man. Firstly, in your professional context, do you find that there is, I guess, close to two trains of two styles of people in their response to that? I guess in that, for me personally, in team sports and in combat sports, I guess, if I've been in a shit mood or upset by something or whatever, it's guaranteed that I don't train, let alone compete as well. I tend to do both better when I'm happier. Whereas I speak to a lot of people that give the same account as you, that if the world's going to shit, they go on and haul ass, and that's their safe space, I guess. But that they probably, if anything, you know, perform better, or at least can go for longer sort of thing with that dark drive. As a trainer, have you found that people tend to be sort of one or the other?
I think they do. You're right. But I think it's also, it comes down to a little bit of not knowing the other side. And I suppose for me, if you had asked me that 5-6 years ago, I said, nah, like, I've got to have something drive me. Like, I've got to, you know, I've got to go hard, otherwise I'm not going to do well. Whereas now I'd look back and go, fuck, I was an idiot. Like, now that I've seen the other side, it's like, nah, the clearer you are in mind, the better you perform, is my complete and utter opinion. So sometimes I think that deep, dark drive is something people only know. Like, that's the only way they know. And they truly haven't delved deep into that relaxed, calm state. They've never actually been into that calm state, which provides a clearer way of thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, no, awesome, man. I was always curious about that. And you've kind of answered what my second part of the question was. I was just going to say that for advice, most people out there, or most guys out there, might perceive that as a pretty positive downside, I guess. But in terms of overload and general emotional processing and whatnot that you've kind of identified there, that overworking out or yeah, let's just say overworking out isn't always necessarily a positive response.
Well, you just got to look at it this way, and obviously this has been me being a bit nerdy and technical here, but we've got obviously two drives. We've got sympathetic and parasympathetic drive, right? And sympathetic's like your fight or flight. Now, it's a stress response. Parasympathetic's like your rest and digest. The problem is, in your fight or flight, obviously you have a higher level of cortisol and that sort of stuff. Now, with the mind, if we can be in that fight or flight mode just by thinking of a traumatic event, right? So if someone said something during the day that's pissed us off, you're automatically going to that sympathetic drive. So you're actually starting to represent and, trying to think of the word, create those responses in the body as if you're actually going through that event, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're actually starting to run the race before you even run the race. So before you even go out for a run, you're actually starting to work the body's systems before you even go for a run. So there's no way you can perform at optimal levels if you're in a high-stressed mindset.
Makes sense, man. Yeah, absolutely. It's funny. This is a divergence from our normal questions, but do you feel like since you've developed your anatomical and specifically, I guess, physiology knowledge base, that you, in understanding the processes better, deal with emotional trauma or upheaval better than you may have previously?
I think since I understood the mind better. And now, don't get me wrong, I don't think I'm an expert or understand it anywhere near enough as what I could, but I think the mind's the big one, because it's something we don't talk about in anatomy and physiology, but when you delve deep into it, it makes sense. And there's one thing I'll always preach, and you've seen me preach this all the times, you can't break the system. The body is intertwined and it's one. So whatever's happening up in the mind is affecting downstream in the body. To me, that's where I made the link and made the click. It's like, if, like, for example, like, people go, oh, sometimes I don't feel like training, but if I just push through it, I'm fine. It's like, yeah, but what are the long-term effects of that? There's a reason you're not feeling right to train. We need to delve deep into understanding what that is, and then we can work on it. Because that could be as simple as, like, you're not eating the correct food, which is affecting your body and producing hormones that are affecting your mindset. It's all intertwined.
Yeah, makes sense, man. Makes sense. So everything's always fairly positive with the way you present it, but flicking back to the positive side of the emotional spectrum, man, what would you say is the best moment of your life to date, and what made it so special for you?
It's a hard question. I reckon that's a harder question to pinpoint one. I honestly still think, like, before I knew what was going to happen in the year ahead, I still think getting that VFL, actually, no, it's not. Nah, I thought it was, but it's not. I reckon running my own gym is.
Why so, man? Why has that been so rewarding for you?
Because it was for me. Like, I didn't do it to, don't get me wrong, I did it to help people, but I didn't do it to impress anyone. Because my first answer then, and it just clicked to me then, my first answer then was going to be when I got my VFL contract. But then I realized I didn't feel well because I had achieved something. Don't get me wrong, there was a part of it that was that. But it was almost like a big middle finger to the people that didn't believe that I could do it. And it was almost like more of a fuck you to them than it was a positive thing for me.
Yeah. So just to correct me if I'm wrong, man, but just to touch on that a little bit deeper, because you've mentioned it twice, but basically due to various distractions, you didn't make it to the VFL AFL system through traditional streams, but then literally tried out and managed to make the squad. Is that correct?
Correct. So there was about 200 people that tried out for a list of 65 at Coburg. And I'd literally gotten, so there was a trial day, and then you got told no there, or you got invited down for pre-season. And I literally emailed, because they weren't the only club I emailed. I think I emailed about three or four clubs. I'd also been invited down by Port Melbourne, but it was literally all off email. So these guys didn't know who I was. So I'd emailed Coburg and they said, we've got a trial day on this date. If you come down there, try out. So I went down there. There was about, I think there was 100 odd people there that day, like 150, 200 people there. Tried out, got invited. Our first training session, I think there was 150 on the track of our first day of preseason. And then I got signed to the list before Christmas. So within 2 months, 8 weeks, I was signed.
Awesome, man. But obviously the key differential that you identified there, and it's obviously super positive as a habit, as you moved away from that and identified something else as your proudest moment, I guess, because it was something that you'd done for your own fulfillment, not to prove other people wrong.
100%. 100%. Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong, it made me feel awesome. It was an achievement. But part of that achievement was more the drive from proving other people wrong as well, which to me, I think that's what makes running my own business and owning a studio and doing things the way I want to do it, is because that was purely and 100% for me.
So bro, who would you say is your biggest hero, or who do you admire the most?
I still reckon I'd say my father, just for pure the fact that the amount I've learned over him. Like, I wouldn't be the person I am today without both my parents, but particularly obviously being a male father's a role model. Without him, I wouldn't be this person. He's definitely shaped who I am a lot, particularly like my work ethic and me energy and that sort of stuff. Like, I wouldn't be the same person without him.
So with that work ethic and energy / drive, you'd identify that as sort of the key attributes that you find admirable about your dad?
100%. 100%. That and, yeah, that would be key attributes, yeah.
So, obviously, a bit of a theory I'm exploring, or something I subscribe to, is that we tend to, at heart, admire people that we, you know, think hold good values, I guess, long story short, and also, to an extent, have admirable values to us. So, you know, how do you think you're traveling along displaying those attributes that you admire about your dad?
I think I'm in the process right now. I think I'm a hell of a lot further than what I was a couple of years ago. To be honest, probably the last 2 years, I feel like I'm a completely different person. But I think I'm on the path. And I suppose this comes down to the drive, like, no offense to your dad, but I want to outdo you. Like, that's just me. Like, I don't want to be the same as dad, because I'm my own person. But it's like, I want to outdo you. Like, just because that's the person I am.
Love it, man. So separate from, aspiring to those good bits of your dad, what do you think is most admirable about you? What's your most admirable quality?
Probably, obviously, me drive's up there, but I reckon even me drive, me passion, yeah, I reckon they're the two. Like, if I'm passionate about something, you know about it. But I'm also driven to learn and understand not just knowledge, but everything in life. Like, if I don't do something well, I want to know what I've done wrong and how I can be better at it. I don't want you to say you've done it wrong and then just leave me hanging. I don't like that. Like, I'd rather be able to fix it. So I reckon me drive, me passion, and me two leading attributes.
I think that's a huge part of, not to get too political, but say extreme left sort of ideologies influence on the current youngest adults and what people then criticize them for. There's something very wrong with that whole eighth place ribbon sort of culture where people aren't getting adequate feedback to develop themselves. Let alone even have a fair indication of where they sit in society and gain some comfort in that. But do you think that's fair to say? And you've identified that twice as emotionally disruptive periods has been where you haven't met a mark, someone's mark, whatever it may be, but haven't been able to get any feedback on where you went wrong or what you should be aspiring to achieve.
100%, man. To be honest, and I'm going to be brutally honest here, I can eighth play through ribbons and that sort of stuff is total bullshit. Like, at the end of the day, like, cool, so you weren't good at something. Like, you couldn't beat that person. Like, if you want what they've got, learn how you can do it better to outdo them. Like, for you, though. Like, if you're not good at something and you don't enjoy it, why should we be rewarded for that?
Society's developed so many different ways of being valuable, I guess, that you don't need to be protected from being terrible at something because there's so many cooperative aspects of society that you can go and find your fit in and be your true self and be successful that I think it only slows the process of people finding what will make them happy and fulfilled if you're bullshitting people on whether they're ever going to be capable of something or not.
Exactly right. Well, you look at all the most successful people in the world, some of the richest people in the world, and you can look at every single one of them. All of them went through some type of failure. Now, I'm sorry, when you're out of school and you're in the big, bad real world, right, and you don't do something to your full ability, you don't get a pat on the fucking back. Like, you get told what's up. And if we're developing people to get a pat on the back when they don't do something as well as someone else, like, are we not setting them up for failure?
Yeah, and I guess anytime something like this happens, coronavirus or a natural disaster or whatever it is, say the bushfires is a really good example, unfortunately, the lessons of which are really quickly forgotten because we've had some major upheaval since, but that broader society and certainly nature above it just doesn't give a fuck about your feelings. It's just a reality. And once people move out of traditional educational systems and get out into the real world, it's profits and tangible measurements, and coming eighth isn't fucking good enough. So if you've been lied to about that daydream, that can be a brutal reality, and you're having to find out way too late into life that you might need to look at doing something else.
100%, man. 100%. And it's funny because, like, but we put – but it's also a two-pronged spectrum here. It's like, yes, we shouldn't be giving out A playthrough ribbons or, rewarding mediocrity, but it's also perception. It's like, why does it matter? What does that – you finishing eighth in a race when you're 5 years old really matter to you? And if it does, sweet, fix it. Like, get better. But if it doesn't, don't do that.
Yeah, totally understand, man. Totally understand. So, obviously, your systems are pretty polished and there's not a lot that you confront that you don't take on in a positive mindset, shall we say. But overall, how would you describe your current relationship with your mental health, bro?
I reckon it's up there. It's at the moment, I'm in the best place I've ever been in my mental health, but I'm always improving it. So like I appreciate you say it's polished, whereas I look at it, it's a constant work in progress. I'm constantly working on ways of optimizing my mental health. And I think that's the way we have to look at it. It's like you're never going to be, it's never going to, until you are no more, right? Like end of days, that sort of stuff. You are never going to be 100%. Never. There's always going to be stuff coming up. There's always going to be highs and lows. And it's just we get better at identifying it and working out tools and mechanisms to keep us moving forward. And that's the biggest thing. I think it's almost, for me, it was almost like a breath of fresh air to understand that I'm never going to be 100%. Like there's always going to be something I can work on and improve and move forward with, because it removes that expectation that if I'm not 100%, then something's wrong with me.
It's funny you say that, man. You and I have discussed some of this already, so please don't think it's disingenuous me saying it, but I've kind of semi-nervously, I guess, watched the way you've dealt with what's been significant challenges to your industry in the last 3 or 4 weeks, shall we say, with coronavirus and whatnot, and how proactive / aggressive you've been about that. And I sit back and think, you know, I hope Cork has obviously taken downtime as well to process that sometimes things are fucked and that sometimes you're allowed to be upset about that and whatnot. And it made me think about my own stuff and obviously talked to you a lot through some relationship issues I had recently, and coming from a situation about 10 years ago where I'd completely train wrecked my life and really bottomed out and bad breakup, overweight, clinically depressed, suicidal, blah, blah, blah. I rebuilt myself to be incredibly durable, shall we say, from I literally had the opportunity to be below, I guess, ground zero and rebuild a really solid foundation thereafter to be capable of dealing with turmoil. But when turmoil came along for me, it was like fucking fantastic. I know exactly how I'm going to get to the other side of this, and right now that doesn't make me any less panicked or make this any fucking less awful. So how do you, I guess other than just word vomit, how do you control that balance for you of being someone that's highly functional and wanting to take on the challenge and also sitting and saying, fuck, all right, this completely uncontrollable has come along and really changed the way I'm going to have to do business and things have been going fucking fantastic and it's a significant hurdle. How do you make sure that you're also emotionally processing that?
100%. So, like, I did go through, I'm not going to lie, like, I went through a stressful period over, like, a couple of weeks ago, but I didn't identify it at the time. So I thought I could still just keep trucking with it. But as soon as, and this is where it comes down to having good people around you too, because sometimes you need the slap in the face from someone else. And I got that slap in the face that I was stressing out without even realizing it. But as soon as I realized it, I went, cool. And I had obviously my girlfriend, family, and my mentor all saying the same things. It's like, cool, this shit's come up. You've stressed out about it without realizing. Now you've realized that you need to change shit. What are you going to do about it? It's like, it's not sitting there, and it's, I suppose it comes down to life doesn't happen to you. It happens for you. So it's like, instead of throwing the toys out of the cot and going, I'm fucked, I'm just going to sit on welfare for the next 6 months and do sweet fuck all. It's like, how can I utilize this and do something different and do something better? So for me, I'd always wanted to be a better business person. Cool. Let's lean into that. Let's understand finances. Let's understand business better, right? You've got time to read now. Read some books. Like, enjoy yourself. Just have some, you can have downtime. There's no excuse for you now, like, to not do everything and still have time. So it's like switching that mindset. It's like, okay, what, instead of looking at things that have been taken away from you, look at things that you can do rather than what you can't do. And I, to me, and this is just my opinion, that relates to absolutely everything.
Yeah, great advice, man. Great advice. And getting back on the more upbeat track, I guess, what's something that you're excited about, man, or looking forward to?
Today, tomorrow, every day. Like, I fucking love every day. The amount of, like, I'm astounded through this coronavirus how every day I wake up having no fucking clue what's going to happen in that day, and it's always awesome. Like, I always do one thing that I didn't expect to happen, and it happens, and I'm like, holy shit. Like, so for me at the moment, the exciting thing is, like, the rest of today, tomorrow, you don't know what's coming up, but for me, that's exciting.
Yeah, love it, man, love it. Not that you're particularly old corker, but you're obviously huge on development, and I'd say that your emotional journey's kind of replicated that. But what's a piece of advice you'd give to 18-year-old Corey?
Do what you want to do, not what everyone else is telling you to do. That's my biggest piece of advice. You grow up through high school knowing that when you get to 18 and you finish year 12, like for over here in Australia and wherever you may be, it's like when you finish year 12, you've got to have your life planned out. It's like, fuck that. I tell you right now, I didn't expect to, when I was 18, to own a business by the age of, what was I, 22, 23. No way. Like, so literally 4 years of leaving school and I was doing something I'd even thought about.
Yeah, it's crazy. That whole concept's crazy to me. Like, I'm the exact same story as you. I did 3 years of a double degree and woke up one day and realized it was absolutely not what I was going to do, and comfortably walked away from it, realizing that it wasn't a wasted 3 and a bit years. It would have been a wasted 6 months to stay. Having, you know, 17, 18-year-olds choose what part they're going to play in a world that they haven't actually fully existed in yet is just fucking crazy.
Exactly right, man. Exactly right. Like, I'm only 25 and I'm still learning every day. Like, you're always learning. Like, there's people that are 80, 90 that are still learning shit every day. So, and the beauty of it is, like, when you get down the nuts and crux of why they want 18-year-olds to know what they want to do, and it all comes down to stability.
This will be an interesting question. Hopefully you can come up with something, because normally when we talk back and forth, it'll often be about more business-orientated stuff. But last question, always give whoever I'm talking to a chance to ask me a question, just my take, or to open the discussion on their thoughts on something in the broader mental health field, I guess, specific to what we're all confronting at the moment. But anything you'd like to ask, bro, or a conversation you'd like us to have a bit of a go over?
I reckon my biggest thing I want to ask you, Braden, is, on your opinion, what's the number one thing holding men back in today's times?
As I've got more into this, man, like, obviously for this platform to be successful, and it's probably who I am anyway, like my relationship history, you know, certainly prior to my current relationship, was very unsteady, and it was usually me that was the asshole. So it's probably a misconception potentially with people that know me for a long time, and probably the negative voice in my own mind that I'm maybe not a misogynist, but just not everything I could be in my relationships with women. But also grew up in a house full of women, amazing women, two big sisters who are comfortably older than me, and my mum, who's still a powerhouse. In terms of discussing gender relations, it's something that I certainly set out in this project to be very neutral, because I don't think that if it's legal and if it's careful, I guess, that any one group necessarily needs their ability to grow be in any way at the expense of another group. And for me, that's certainly with gender. So what's happened in the last, where are we, sort of 70 years, 70 years has been a huge change in the way society's gone on for forever. So, you know, there's been amazing feminist movement. There's been incredible technological advances in terms of reliable birth control and sanitary products, as we actually discussed on your podcast probably the better part of a month ago now, that has meant that, you know, in the blink of an eye in terms of Homo sapien history, we've gone from under half of our female population partaking in the workforce in any way, shape or form to the vast majority of it. And immaturely, anytime a group starts to, be more successful or be closer to their potential or do better, someone else tends to feel hard done by. And I don't think it's actually the case. I think society, full stop, has developed dramatically, is my take on it. And whilst what men could always rely on as a sense of identity in terms of, being the protector, being the provider, whatever it may be, that's been fairly consistent across potentially hundreds of thousands of years, has changed in a 70-year period, like literally in a generation. And for me, it's just a matter of riding the wave as men and being mature and finding new senses of identity. I was actually talking to one of my dear female friends the other day about this topic, and she'd sent me an article about domestic violence and about how it happens to men as well. And I basically said, yes, valuable, but I don't like the media's narrative on this at all. People are shit to people, and if you put it across a big enough case sample, you'll find examples of every type of human being shit to another type of human. That doesn't mean that men aren't violent towards women, and it isn't awful, and that doesn't mean that women aren't violent or emotionally abusive towards men, and it isn't awful. It's, they're different topics. It doesn't need to be a back and forth there. So, like, men need to find a new sense of identity. For me, you look at the flip side of the coin, women have gone from the safety, and I say safety because traditionally humans, the least choices they have, the more happy they tend to be. Incredible volumes of research to suggest that. So women have gone from the relative safety of being able to stay home and have ownership of that domain and raise children, be the mother of our next generation, to having to do all that and now also work, and our consumerism has driven us to the point where that's not necessarily a choice for most families. That's what's required of women. And being that they are then on the same playing field as men in that, there's the the continuation of a feminist agenda that can potentially try and eat itself a little bit, where it's like, okay, so now you're working, you should also be extremely successful. And it's like, no, hang on, most men aren't extremely successful. So women have both had to have this incredible role of being the mother and, being the sanity in the home and everything else. And now they have to go out there and be aggressive and ambitious and all these other things. It's entirely new for them as well. And I don't say that to be in the slightest condescending, but I think sometimes as men, when we feel a bit hard done by our new lack of purpose, I think women during the same generation have had to probably adapt even more to us. And we're all just struggling to try and find a way through it together. It's probably my hot take. And if society, through our collective efforts, has become so safe for humans that the traditional alpha, aggressive, sort of hardworking roles of men that we familiarise as being blokey and a sense of purpose aren't as necessary, then fantastic. It means that we might have to learn to be more empathetic and emotionally contributing and intellectually contributing. And this has all come out of it being the single safest, most medically developed, famine-free, war-free time in human history. I don't think it's appropriate for us to feel overly hard done by. That a symptom of that is that we feel a little bit purposeless. It's just time to address it and move forward. That's my soapbox moment, brother. What are your thoughts on all that?
I love it, man. I think that's perfect. I think it's just, it is. It's like, it's a changing world. The world's changed. It comes down to that notion. It's like, people don't like being uncomfortable. But it's like, just because we're not, we're not in the caveman world anymore where we have to fight fucking saber-tooth tigers and shit, but you can still be alpha in other aspects of life.
Yeah, insanely true, mate.
Awesome, man.
Have you read or audiobooked Sapiens as yet?
I'm reading it right now, brother.
Oh my god,
it's amazing
for me. And let's not get too carried away. Obviously, some of what's in there from a anthropology, geographical, anatomical perspective is speculative. Let's shall we say it's one line of thinking, some of what's in there, but it's also a relatively accurate, extremely concise history of humankind, of Homo sapiens. And for me, listening to that and listening to the way the world was when we came into existence compared to the way it is today, two things: that we're a pretty brutal species, I guess, but also that we've achieved fairly incredible things. And whether you're religious or not, we've done that to an extent without any form of referee or guidance. So we've gone from, you know, being a species of many, no more special than any of them, to running the world substantially so. And other than our current environmental concerns, which have only occurred in the last 2-3 generations and that we are interested in addressing, we've constantly moved the world towards being in a better place, not just for humankind, but certainly for humankind. And I think that's pretty impressive. For me, it was a really optimistic piece.
100%, man. 100%. And I think you hit the nail on the head. It was like, how advanced, like, this is how crazy we are as, like, a species. And it's like, yeah, it's hundreds of thousands of years ago, whatever it may be. But, like, we were literally, like, building weapons out of sticks and spears and that sort of stuff. And now I'm literally sitting fucking 18 hours away from you on a call talking to you over the internet. Like, to us, it's normal now. But when you think about back when we first started, like, we had no fucking idea you could do this.
Oh, it's unprecedented. Like you're basically saying there. When you take the broader chronology of Homo sapiens into account, you think about insane advancements that changed the way we interacted with the planet. Were as simple as creating fire. Creating language was a huge one. In historical sense, in terms of changing the path of humankind. But before those things, we were literally another species, like you said, before tools, before weapons, before fire, and certainly before language. Language was one of the biggest ones. So if you think about what we've achieved in, I don't know, let's say 200 years, but realistically it's far less than that, to become a global community from a technological standpoint, and then... use the eyes of realizing how big language initially played as an influence on the development of humankind. We're such a blink of an eye into the next phase. It's obviously very interesting to see where it would go, but it's also incredibly harsh to judge humans in any way, great shape or form, where they've constantly moved towards a better relationship with each other and a better relationship with the planet.
100%, man. 100%.
All right, bro. So we will leave it there for the recorded aspect of catching up. And thank you so much for being so candid. And I think there's some really, really good tips there that a lot of guys, not just guys that are your mold of person, but guys in general will lean on in terms of ways to deal with adversity.
Yeah, thanks, man. It was awesome.
All right, bro. Blokes, thanks again for tuning in. Really hope you got something out of that. Start having those conversations with your mates, with your family, with a mental health professional if you need to. There's absolutely no shame in it. If you want to reach out to us or follow along, we're on Facebook or Instagram under Blokes Don't Talk. And to listen, we're available on all your good podcast platforms. Share it with a mate. Even if you're not quite sure, worst he can do is tell you he's not that interested. Might come back to you in a month or two and have really got something out of it. Thanks again. Talk next week.